The numbers told the story, they always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Good Monday morning to you. It is a numbers game at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network, VSiN.com, Game Plus, iHeartRadio, YouTube TV, and of course SiriusXM channel 158. It's Gil Alexander. And no Kelly Bidlin. Where's Kelly Bidlin? When did this happen? I don't recall approving any vacation. We'll say Kelly is on assignment. You know how they used to do that on local news? And Kelly Bidlin is on assignment. Good show today, because we got stuff to talk about NBA and NHL-wise. We will talk National Basketball Association Finals with Carl Sack a little later on the show. NHL, Stanley Cup Final, Jay Kahn here momentarily. Game 3 tonight between the Florida Panthers and the Edmonton Oilers. That series knotted up at one game apiece. And later this hour, a special treat, a rare numbers game appearance from Megapod superstar Todd Wishnev. Yes, Wishnev in the hizzy. And this is one of these things, I don't usually say this before segments, but you may want to take notes on this. If you are a baseball hardo and you want little baseball handicapping nuggets, we will have a long discussion with Todd. We will name names. We will name teams. We will talk about little betting things that he does, because all we do all day, we're on a group thread, Wishnev, who's, by the way, the most active of the bunch, Fezzik, Will Hill, Felica's on there as well. And that's all we're doing all day is betting baseball. So we will sort of bring that to life on the show today. Wes Reynolds will also join us a little later on to talk U.S. Open golf, as the golf's third major begins this week down there in Texas. Okay, let's start with tennis. Now, I don't usually start with tennis, but you will have to indulge me today, because before we were all bettors, we were all sports fans, and I do think you have to stop in place and sort of appreciate something that that you see in any sport. And yesterday, in case you were trapped under a heavy object, Carlos Alcaraz wins the French Open. He beats Jannik Sinner in a five-set thriller. It is Carlos Alcaraz's fifth major championship. He did it to the day, by the way, the exact same number of days that it took Rafa Nadal to win his fifth major, 22 years of age, 1 month and 3 days. And he does so in the greatest clay court match I think I've ever witnessed, or maybe anybody's ever witnessed. The second longest Grand Slam final in the Open era, in Open era history. Was it 5 hours, 29 minutes yesterday, 385 total points, Sinner 193 of them, Alcaraz 192 of them. And now this great rivalry in modern men's tennis continues, where since the beginning of 2024, Sinner 0-5 against Alcaraz, 91-3 against everybody else. And this was just absolutely incredible yesterday. By the way, the only longer Grand Slam final in history, the 2012 Australian Open between Novak Djokovic and Rafa Nadal, that went 5 hours and 53 minutes. Remember, they played that out in the fifth set. But yesterday, in case you missed it, Sinner's up 2-0. Then he gets a break early in the third set to go up 1-1, but Carlos breaks right back, and then he breaks again, and he wins that third set 6-4. And then the fourth set happens, and no one will forget this anytime soon. Fourth set, Sinner breaks Alcaraz to love, by the way, in the seventh game of the fourth set to go up 4-3. So he's just got to hold serve twice. He consolidates the break, goes up 5-3. He's one game away from winning this, and then he's 1 point away from winning it, because it's love 40 on Alcaraz's racket. And at that point, Patrick Everson, our buddy, @PatrickE_Vegas, tweets out, in the French Open final, Alcaraz, at this moment again, down 3-5 in the fourth set, down love 40, with facing three championship points, plus 6,500, otherwise known as 65-1, on in-play odds at DraftKings. Alcaraz saves those 3 points. And by the way, what's getting glossed over on that is the first of those 3 points, those three championship points for Sinner that he saved, Alcaraz hit a ball that clipped the baseline. And that's the difference. It's not a game of inches. It's a game of millimeters. That's the difference between us talking about Jannik Sinner winning a tidy four-set final against Carlos Alcaraz and this becoming the epic match that it was. So Alcaraz goes on. He saves those 3 points. He wins that game. But remember, he's still down 5-4, and it's on Sinner's racket. He still has to break Sinner, which he does. It goes to 5-5. It goes to a tiebreaker. Alcaraz wins that tiebreaker 7-3. And then you go to the fifth set, and he immediately, Carlos, breaks center to go up one love, and you're thinking, well, this is going to be a runout. And sure enough, he holds that advantage until late in the set, 5-4. Carlos serving for the match. He gets broken by center, 5-5. It goes to a tiebreaker. Tiebreaker's fifth set in slams now. You go to 10. Alcaraz dominating the fifth set tiebreaker. Three mini breaks up. Broke center's serve the first three times. He was up 7-love, for goodness sake, in that fifth set tiebreaker. Wins it 10-2. Carlos Alcaraz is your French Open champion. And again, it's his fifth major. Sinner now stuck on three majors, but these two guys combined have won the last six men's majors. Yannick Sinner winning all the hardcourt ones, if you will, the two Aussie Opens, the one U.S. Open in the last six, whereas Carlitos has won the clay and the grass, two Frenches, and one Wimbledon in that span. By the way, he probably shouldn't have won either of the two French Opens. Zverev probably should have beaten him last year too, but then there was a old umpire comes off the chair and does this beep, sorry, and it was wrong call by the umpire last year. So Alcaraz, either way, gets it done. It's just an amazing thing. Congratulations to anybody who had Alcaraz. It was just, you know, beyond that, you just think about what this means for men's tennis moving forward. Between 2005 and 2012, the French Open in 2005 to Wimbledon of 2012, you had a span of 30 Grand Slams where Federer, Nadal, and Djokovic won 29 of them. And if you extended that, if you went from the French Open in 2005 to the French of 2023, there were 72 slams. Djokovic, Nadal, and Federer won 61 of those 72. We could be heading into a Sinner-Alcaraz kind of era. We'll see. But right now, it's kind of looking that way. And the only other thing I want to add about that is, you know, you think about in sports, Ali may not have known that the Rumble in the Jungle or Thrill in Manila was going to be his finest moment. Sugar Ray Leonard at the time may not have known that his first fight with Tommy Hearns, when his retina was detached and he came back from sheer defeat to beat Tommy Hearns, he may not have known that was perhaps the greatest moment of his career. In tennis, we kind of know at the moment. 1980 Wimbledon final between Borg and McEnroe. The 2008 Wimbledon final between Nadal and Federer. And this yesterday. You kind of know, and maybe for Carlos, maybe that's the greatest moment of his career ever. He's got a long way to go. He's only 22, but maybe that was it yesterday. It was just unbelievable. Congratulations to everybody who had Coco Gauff on the ladies' side, plus 550. By the way, the Beating the Book French Open podcast that preceded this tournament, Drew had Coco plus 550. Remember, Coco got the best of the draw. He got her at plus 550. That ends up being a winner. We all had Sinner and Alcaraz in the final, so there was no real drama in that. That was sort of the collision course. But I hope if you're a VSiN subscriber, you're VSiN.com/picks, because I had Coco plus 198 in the final itself. That price that in that final against Sabalenka represented to me the most ridiculous line of any match in 2025, period. No way Coco, with her great clay numbers, the best, by the way, at that point, should have been that big of a dog. She gets it done in three sets, and a bit of a flap afterwards when Arina Sabalenka says that it was because of her own errors that Coco won it. Sort of took some shine away from Coco. Even said that if Iga had beaten her in the semis, Iga Swiatek, that Iga would have beaten Coco. And that's kind of bush league, because part of tennis, this just in, is keeping the ball in play yourself. And it's also like one of those gamblers who, when you win a bet, you always think it's your genius, but when you lose, the gods sort of conspired against you. And that's how Sabalenka seemed to have reacted to that final. Iga committed 42 unforced errors against you in the previous match, 12 hitting the ball into the stands randomly in the third set in the previous match. Somehow she didn't process that as lucky, but she was trying to take it away from Coco. Coco Gauff, congratulations to everybody who was on her, on the ladies' side, her second major. To the NBA last night, we'll get Carl Sack to chime in on Game 3, which isn't until Wednesday in the NBA Finals. The interminable NBA Finals, Game 3, not till Wednesday. Back in Indiana, though, now, with the series knotted up at one game apiece, Indiana with a dramatic, huge win in Game 1. So I guess after yesterday's blowout, where OKC ends up winning it by 16, led by as many as 23, that game yesterday turning on a run in the second quarter when it was 33-27. OKC, and then they went on a 19-2 run to take their biggest lead at 23. It never got to single digits after that. It never got to the spread of 11.5 or 11 after that. So it was a run out by OKC. SGA finishes the game with, again, an epic performance here. Caruso, by the way, 20. Wiggins, 18 off the bench. Combined 9 of 16 from 3 for those two. But SGA, 34 points, 5 rebounds, 8 assists, 4 steals, 1 block, only 2 turnovers in the Thunder's 123-107 victory. They cover the spread. For those of us who had the under 228, this was a brutal beat. Gets to 230 after 130 points were scored in the second half. The spread itself got somewhat, I guess, a little dicey there in the last minute and a half. 116 left. They got it to 15, the Pacers did, so I guess it was in jeopardy there for a second. But instead, easy cover, easy peasy, I guess, in the end for the Thunder, even though there was that little flirtation. As far as the VSiN Killer Sports Challenge, Steve Fezzik with a win on the Thunder last night. He's in first place over Zach Cohen. They are vying for first place, the $3,000 prize in this one. I got knocked out yesterday. I would have been knocked out with a Fezzik win anyway, despite my under loss. The only other person who's still in this, Doug Kazarian, who I think would have to win out, Fezzik would have to lose out for him to even get a tie. So really, it's a two-man race. Fezzik and our own Zach Cohen. Thanks to Carl Sack at Killer Sports for the challenge this summer on that. We'll come back. We'll talk hockey. Jay Kahn on the other side. It's a numbers game at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
On VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Want to bet smarter this football season? Become a VSiN Pro subscriber today. Get a full year for just $199 plus a free pre-order of the NFL Sharp Betting Playbook by Josh Applebaum, a no-nonsense guide to reading the market, spotting sharp action, and making smarter NFL bets. Sign up now, get instant access to a daily email with all the best bets from hosts and their guests, real-time betting splits from DraftKings and Circa, 24/7 video access on the VSiN Watch app, plus our 2025-26 NFL betting guide dropping July 1st. Don't miss out on this limited-time offer. Go to VSiN.com/subscribe. Use promo code BOOK to sign up. That's promo code BOOK, B-O-O-K. That's VSIN.com/subscribe. Skill Alexander, live from Circa Resort Casino, downtown Las Vegas. We get tweets, beating the book. Always appreciated Mr. Tweets while I was gone, even though I sort of hung out there a little bit. Duck fan for life. Welcome back, Gil. I'm usually pretty numb with gambling losses, but after losing both Sinner and Burns bets on Sunday, I felt like crawling up in a ball and crying. Obviously, Yannick Sinner, we've already talked about, losing that epic five-setter to Carlos Alcaraz. And then Sam Burns, the RBC Canadian, losing in a playoff to Ryan Fox. Burns, despite a 62 in the final round, he got it to a playoff, but then loses in the playoff. I believe our next guest, Jay Kahn, actually had Ryan Fox, if I'm not mistaken. So we'll get to Jake here momentarily and confirm that. This is from Wet Willy Colon. More impressive, all of the Pacers Halliburton comeback victories wrapped up, combined into one nice present, or Carlito's coming back from the death triple championship point. Thanks, I'll hang up and listen. I still think it's the Pacers. As great, I mean, as great as that was yesterday, as awesome as that comeback was. I mean, people do come back from love 40, maybe not with those stakes, I get it. But the Pacers thing, dude, I mean, like, here's the thing. And let me just say this again. Halliburton did the disappearing act yesterday. First three quarters, he had just 5 points, 3 rebounds, 4 assists. Then he added 12 points and 2 assists in what was essentially garbage time yesterday. By the way, noticeable slight limp arriving and leaving his press conference. But, you know, you talk about teams of destiny. And if somehow the Pacers are to pull this off, I always talked about like UVA, the Virginia Wahoos of 2019, that college basketball team, their run in March Madness. Of all quote unquote teams of destiny, that run was kind of the most that fit the bill, I think, of anything I remember. But if the Pacers somehow pull this off, game 5 Eastern Conference first round, game 2 Eastern Conference semifinal, game 1 Eastern Conference final, and game 1 of this NBA finals, those 4 outcomes alone, where their win probability, do we have that, by the way, Danny? I'm sorry to spring this on you. Where their win probability is just, you know, 2%-ish on average in all of those, this would be the greatest team of Destiny run ever. Just to answer your question on that. So I would give that to the Pacers. Here it is. Pacers, this is from Tyler Smith. Thank you, Danny. Danny Higgins, by the way, running things back there for Kelly Bidlin today. Tyler Smith, the Pacers now have a win in every round with this probability. 0.3%, 2.1%, 4.1%, 2.6%. The odds of all four games going the Pacers' way, you do the math there. 6-0 deep, 6-7-1-6. A 1 in 1.5 million chance. So yeah, that beats 65-1. Let's go with the Pacers. Ryan Hyatt, great to see Gil back on VSiN. ANG, hopefully you were able to get out of your timeshare without even using a lawyer. I hear it happens. What's with the timeshare jokes? I'm not following. Fred Courier, glad you're back. Now we have to find the Monday assignment for Kelly Bidlin. Yes, we do. Tim Bowers, Gil, thanks for not only the info on how to bet the French Open, but also for carrying the torch for tennis. I've now made more of an emphasis on trying to watch it when I can. Quote, imagine not liking tennis, unquote. That was my tweet yesterday. Imagine not liking tennis. Los Vegas 514, welcome back. Yo, to my eyes, that was the greatest tennis match I've ever watched. I'm proud to have the name Carlos for reals. LOL. There you go, Carlos. And Nick at Real Nick's. Welcome back, Gil. Do me a favor. Next time you go on vacation, please alert me in advance. I work while your show is on, and it occurs to me I'm much more relaxed and productive when I hear your dulcet radio voice. Without it, it's total chaos, LOL. Thank you. That's very nice of you. Jake Hahn has been very kind to stand by, courtesy of the Progressive guest line. Pardon me. To talk a little hockey with us. Maybe a little golf. You did have Ryan Fox, right? You won this.
Gil, first of all, welcome back. Second of all, how about Danny with that stat on the fly? Great production work there. And just an amazing stat. I was looking at it on the board there. That's just absolutely insane, some of these wins that they're pulling off. And yes, I did have Ryan Fox. I feel bad for Ducks fan for life. I've been on the other side of many playoffs. It was actually strange cheering against Sam Burns. Sam Burns is a guy that's won me a lot of bets over the years, and I've sweat a couple playoffs being on Sam Burns. So it was a little strange to have to cheer against him. You go four holes, and ultimately Ryan Fox wins. But I'm Canadian, Gil, so I feel like I'm owed the Canadian Open. This is just how it works. Ryan Fox gets the win, and you get a little extra money in the account before the U.S. Open, which can be a little bit of a dangerous thing sometimes.
The least we could do for you is get you a win on a RBC Canadian Open bet, for God's sakes. Right. Do you have, before we get to the NHL, do you have any preliminary U.S. Open thoughts? You were saying you haven't dived in big time yet.
So it's tough because you've got Scottie Scheffler, who's basically 3-1 in that range, top of the board, for good reason. He is just in unbelievable form right now. It's hard to bet against this guy. You've got Bryson, who I always respected at U.S. Open. I was on Bryson last year when he won at the U.S. Open, and we know he's long. I can figure out these golf courses, overpower these golf courses. Rory, bad week at the Canadian Open, but we always have to look at him. So I think with those guys at the top, it's pushing some pretty decent players into that 20-30-1 range. I think that's where I'm going to be looking. Xander Schauffele's a name I've been looking at for a while. I just don't feel like his game is fully back, and I don't know if a U.S. Open at Oakmont is where it's all of a sudden going to click for him. So I think I'm looking for accuracy this week. I know we always look for length at the U.S. Open, but with the rough, the thick rough, I'm looking at guys that can hit fairway. So maybe a Colin Morikawa, something, a player of that prototype, and hey, maybe even take a shot on a Brooks Koepka, who I saw down at 60-1. I know he's not coming in with any form, but I see Koepka 60-1 at a U.S. Open, and I get a little bit interested.
We still getting the Koepka feels on these things? Still, we're still lingering.
It's tough. I don't think I'm ever going to completely wave the white flag on Brooks Koepka, but I get why you wouldn't want to touch him right now. It doesn't feel like he's the same player. But if he's ever going to show up, it's a U.S. Open, it's a PGA Championship, it's these style of golf tournaments. Tough to get a gauge on his game right now, but at 60-1, you don't have to put too much of a big play on Brooks. Just in case he does find it.
All right, to the NHL. We were just talking about Alcaraz Sinner. And as long as we're talking about great events, so far, two games in, at least if we do the whole on-pace thing, this is on pace to be one of the epic Stanley Cup finals ever. We've had two overtime games already. Draisaitl with the winner for the Oilers in Game 1, Marchand for the Panthers in Game 2. We're not up at one game apiece. Game 3 is tonight. Panthers are minus 137. They're a slight series favorite now as well. By the way, up to minus 140 as it ticks up here in real time. So they're a slight series favorite. How does this go tonight? And then I've got a Conn Smythe question for you real quick after this. But what do you think happens here in Game 3?
I do love the Conn Smythe conversation, so we can get into that. And it actually is very fascinating this year as well. But I'm going to stick with Edmonton here, Gil. I expected there to be some ups and downs, ebbs and flows in this series. Edmonton looked fantastic in game one. Ultimately, it takes still deep into overtime for Edmonton to win, and a power play in overtime for that matter. But I thought they carried the play in game one. Now, game two was a lot closer. I thought there was back and forth between both teams. Florida made their adjustments, looked a lot better, and they were full marks for winning that game two in overtime. So, like you said off the top, I mean, if this trend continues, we are headed for one of the all-time great Stanley Cup finals. And hey, it's nice. The NBA finals tied 1-1 as well. The Pacers have had their moments, so maybe we could get long series in both. But I'm just going to stick with the Edmonton Oilers here. I like the plus money that we're getting on the money line tonight more than the series price. I don't mind the series price, but you're not getting a ton of value on it based on where it was. And they have lost a home game. So I don't know about the series price for me at this moment, but I like the Oilers on the money line tonight, getting that kind of plus money with this Edmonton team. That's the path I'll be going tonight.
All right, Conn Smythe, I'm holding a Draisaitl ticket. Remember, this was my my chase bet because I thought the Oilers were going to win it all, and I didn't bet the Oilers, and so now it's Draisaitl for Conn Smythe. He's got three overtime goals in this postseason. Remember, this is for everybody else. This is a playoff award. It's not just a final series award. He's got three overtime goals. That ties the record. He's still 7-1. I get it that Connor McDavid has a couple more points than he does, 31-29 in this playoffs, 25 assists to 19. Obviously, Draisaitl with the edge, 10-6 in goals. Should it be that big of a disparity between McDavid at +105 and Draisaitl at 7-1? And if the Panthers end up winning it, what's the bet?
Well, I don't think it should be as big of a disparity between those two names. I think it should be much closer. I think the reason why, or one of the reasons why you're seeing that, is just because it is Connor McDavid. He's got the name value. Not that Draisaitl doesn't, but McDavid's considered the best player in the world. And I think a lot of people have bet McDavid. So the market has reacted accordingly, where they're not going to be able to hang too big of a number on Connor McDavid. I love Draisaitl at 7-1, Gil. He's scoring the big goals, and people remember goals. Assists are nice, but everybody remembers who puts the puck in the back of the net. And I already feel like voters are maybe gravitating towards Draisaitl early in this series. So I love where you're at for that play, and I still like him there at 7-1. It's Sam Bennett for me for the Florida Panthers. It's a little more open on the Panthers side. You could still maybe take a shot down the board at some of these other names, but Sam Bennett to me has the inside track and seems like garnering a lot of attention from the people that actually matter.
Yeah, Sam Bennett 6-1 if you are to go that way for Conn Smythe. Jake, appreciate it very much, man. Thank you so much.
Always great kicking the week off with you, Gil. Let's have some fun.
At JHon4 on the old Twitter machine. Todd Wishnev next.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
The NBA Finals and the Stanley Cup are here, and ProfitX is offering the best odds all playoffs long. ProfitX, a peer-to-peer sports exchange available in 40-plus states. The first of its kind in the U.S., you'll be able to make your sports picks against other groups of fans rather than against sportsbooks. Exchanges guarantee you the best odds on average by 10 to 20%. Even request your own odds. Download ProfitX today with code VSIN and earn up to $200 in profit cash over your first month. Really, check it out. ProfitX, promo code VSIN. Again, earn up to $200 in profit cash over your first month. It's Gil Alexander, Kelly Midland on assignment. We get tweets at Beating the Book. Always appreciate it. James Sott. The match yesterday didn't even feel like 5-plus hours as I watched. Amazing shot after amazing shot. Side note, already did a future for Queens Club 500, so my resolution of no grass court plays didn't last 8 hours after clay season. Yeah, somebody, forgive me, I can't remember who on Twitter yesterday was like, are you going to keep your self-made promise that you're not going to bet grass season in tennis? And my response was, I won't for a week or two. So I can't guarantee it past that, but I'm not doing anything today. Jason Stark, VSiN runs. Oh, this is what the whole timeshare joke was. Jason Stark says, VSiN runs, get out your timeshare ads every commercial break, LOL. And 3JackH3131 ads. Gil, where is the opening for producer number 10 on the VSiN site? Timeshares are on the top of everyone's priority list, and you can get help from a guy who doesn't even like lawyers. This is a commercial that airs between segments for those SiriusXM listeners. Yes. No, I'm familiar with the guy. He really doesn't want you to think he's a lawyer. He really has it in for attorneys.
That was my big takeaway from that. Now I get the timeshare joke. Ladies and gentlemen, he is the star of the Megapod, along with Will Hill, the Beating the Book podcast Megapod, which we do every week during football season. You may know him from his past gig here on the Numbers Game, which we used to fondly call Wishnev Wednesdays, which spawned all kinds of copycats. Ladies and gentlemen, from his mom's cork attic in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line, it is the great Todd Wishnev, at T. Wishnev. How you doing, Toddy?
What's up, Gilly? How are you?
I'm good. By the way, I prefaced the intro for you at the beginning of the show. I said, people, take out your pencils and paper, because there's no taking time. And this is sort of our group chat brought to life. Because how many hours of the day do we spend on this group chat betting baseball? It's primarily, you're primarily the originator. All day long, right?
There are a lot of texts. And, sometimes you get really good data points. And then sometimes you get stuff like, the Astros went to bed 2 hours late, and they're not going to be able to hit the next day. And, sometimes our friends are very, very smart, and other times they say silly things like that. I'm not going to tell you who I'm talking about, but he does like math.
Does it rhyme with Mezik by any chance?
Maybe.
All right. We'll start broadly, and then I want to get to specific pitchers and teams and some little nuggets on each. But some of the things that you can riff on any one of these or on several of these. But some of the things you do, in-game strikeout props, you are always, I'll throw a bunch at you, you're always cognizant of which teams have good and bad bullpens. You're thinking about the hits market before the game even starts, hit props. Let's start with some of those because I don't want to throw too much. But let's start with the in-game Ks. You love betting those.
Yeah, I've been doing it this year. I'm not saying I'm outstanding at it yet, but it is a fun thing to do. And you can, start to get an idea of who's going, if they strike out, three or four guys in the first two innings, who's going to continue with some ridiculous day where they strike out 10 or 11 and who might peter out, and just only get like five or six. And of course, it always depends on the lineup and righty lefty and all kind of stuff like that. But, it is an interesting market. Like a guy like Scooble often, if he starts striking, you're watching the game, he starts striking people out and there's a couple lefties coming in the lineup. You might get two or three more right now, because he strikes out so many left-handed batters. He also strikes out a million right-handed batters as well. But, in-game K market also has to do with how many pitches are they going to allow this guy to throw? Because, you might be 30 pitches in and the guy has three strikeouts, but, he's a guy that if he gets in trouble in the mid-80s pitches, like a guy like Joe Ryan from Minnesota, if he starts getting in trouble, they pull him pretty quickly. Then there's other guys who get it like a long leash. Like me and Willie were going crazy because we had I think it was an outs bet. We bet Freddie Peralta under 14 and a half outs. It was like to not go through five innings. And because he had some ungodly number of pitches in three, and it was like 75 pitches or something, that we were like, there's no way he can get to. Well, guess what? They let Freddie throw 109 pitches that day, and me and Willie's head exploded. But if you know, and if you're watching that constantly, you start to learn the markets and learn the guys and learn who gets a longer leash, who gets a shorter leash. There's obviously little angles there.
So this is, I just want to sort of clarify this for new bettors or newish bettors who you're going to hear hours of content on shows like this, by the way, and on all kinds of shows on sports betting networks. And because of the nature of we're on air at a certain time, and so we're going to talk pre-flop about games that are happening that day, that are yet to happen that evening. We're going to talk about games generally speaking in that manner. But the real, to me, again, and I used to bet baseball with Dr. Bob so many years ago. Every day of my life, I was a baseball bettor primarily over everything else. But the way that the game has evolved, I really do feel like what you're doing with baseball and keeping note of these things is probably the best way to do things. Sadly, we're not doing shows while all of this is happening, but just to riff on some of the players you just named. So,
you know what, on the prop market, you could, in the prop market, like the hits market, you can do that, but go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, you're right. So there is exceptions, right? There's, you know, a hits market pre-flop, but when we're talking about pitchers, I think like this is a great thing that you seized on, which is, okay, you're watching a game, there are live props, in-game props that are still up on the board. And there's so many little things you can be aware of. So Skubal, 33.8% strikeout rate against lefties. Some other names, Mackenzie Gore, a 42.7% K rate against lefties. That is, for those who, you know, haven't lived their lives on Fangraphs,
it's absurd.
It's a cartoon number. By the way, there is one pitcher who has an even higher K rate against lefties than Gore. Do you know who it is by any chance?
Is it Reagan's, maybe?
Jesus Luzardo of the Phillies.
Oh, 40, okay. Oh yeah, he's...
Yeah, 44.4%. Yeah.
And, yeah. And I tried to actually target that, like, on individual... You know, they have these individual markets per at-bat, which are, like, usually against you, and it's almost impossible to beat them because there's so many choices. Like, will it be a walk? Will it be a strikeout? Will it be a double, a single? All that crap. And obviously, when there's all those things... The hold is almost impossible to beat. But like you were saying, when you get a guy like, you know, let's say Jesus Luzardo, right, or is going to a guy or Gore is going to strike out, you know, 40% of left-handed batters, oftentimes they're not putting that in the algorithm,
right,
that it's lefties. And so you might even be able to find a good bet there if he's coming up against a guy like Pete Crow Armstrong, who loves to strike out against lefties. You know what I mean? So there's stuff like that.
That you brought up Joe Ryan of the Twins. I think that's also like a great, again, when Joe Ryan is pitching, and you're right, Todd, obviously know if the, you know, how many pitch, what his pitch count is, keep that in mind, what's happening. But Ryan, you mentioned off air, like the splits are unbelievable. So career, his splits are stark, right? 32.4% K rate versus right-handed batters, 22.3% versus lefties. But this year, that has gone on steroids. It's 36.7% K rate for Joe Ryan versus right-handed hitters, 19.4%, which is anemic, versus lefties. So, not anemic, but it's not good. He doesn't miss a lot of bats, let's put it that way. So you have to know that kind of thing. So Joe Ryan, file that in the Joe Ryan file, right? Where it's like, okay, know that about him.
Or like a Framil Valdez. Like, I went to the Pirate game because all the games were over and they had that long rain delay, so the Pirate game was going to start at 10 o'clock. So I was over at the casino, so I went down to the Pirate game, and Framil Valdez was starting for the Astros. He struck out the first three guys in 9 pitches. Now, if you know about Valdez, they let him go a million pitches, and he can somehow get – like he has more complete games, I think, more than anybody. He has these really short innings sometimes where it's like eight pitches. So he only had 9 pitches. He had 3 strikeouts against a team like the Pirates, who love to strike out. They just love to strike out, the Pirates, right? So I took over 8.5 strikeouts, and I took over 20.5 outs because he only had 9 pitches. And I know they're going to let him – they may let him go 105 pitches, Framil Valdez, you know? So, and against – it's against the Pirates. They can't hit. So, you know, those are the kind of things you want to look at. You know, it's the same kind of idea.
I want to get to bullpens after the break, because I think in-game betting, knowing bullpens is maybe the – if you could say to the better, like, if you have to know one thing in this, know bullpens. So I want to get to that in a minute. But just one other thing with splits. Jacob DeGrom was just sort of like nerd diving into fan graphs. Huge righty-lefty.
Huge
splits. But this is interesting because – you know what, his slash versus lefties is 208, 258, 436. Against righties, it's even better, right? 177 batting average against 231 OBP, 202 slugging. By the way, the WOBA, weighted on base, is 201. But here's the thing. Even though it's better against righties, he's striking out way more lefties. 28.9% K rate against lefties, but not so much this year against righties, which is strange historically for him. He usually crushes right-handed hitters by K. Bullpens next with Todd.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Betting on sports? Why not try the races? First Bet lets you wager on hundreds of horses every day from top tracks across the U.S. and around the world. Sign up at firstbet.com. That's the number one, stbet.com. Use promo code VSID200 to claim a 20% rebate for your first 60 days up to $200. Head to firstbet.com today. By the way, congratulations to anybody who had Sovereignty to win the Belmont Stakes. So Sovereignty ends up winning the Derby and the Belmont. The Derby and the Belmont. Again, two out of the three Triple Crown races. Journalism, of course, the Preakness winner. But yet again, one of these things where a horse takes two out of three of the legs of the Triple Crown. These and I know that some of these horses, they don't run all three legs now, and it's a whole thing. But it's one of these things between Affirmed winning it in 1978 and then was it American Pharoah, I believe, winning it in 2015. All those years where no horse won a Triple Crown. One of the biggest things I used to say on this show and on the podcast was, yeah, but no one ever processes how many close calls there have been. And there have been a ton of them. So it was way more likely to occur than people gave it credit for. And I suggest that it still is if these trainers decide to run their horses for all three legs of the Triple Crown. Got to do that first, obviously. Okay, back to Mr. Wishnev. Oh, I want to read this one tweet for Todd before we get to Todd. Todd, this is from Kevin Ryan at Road King KR. Says, Gil, after hearing over and over about Todd living in his mother's attic, I never believed it. After seeing the scenery behind him last segment, it is in fact true. What do you have to say for yourself, sir?
Nothing to say. I don't actually live in the attic, but anyways, we can continue on.
Well, thanks for rolling with that. I appreciate it, Todd. At T. Wishnev, by the way, for Todd Wishnev and all of his thoughts on tennis and weight gain and loss and that kind of thing. By the way, you're looking good, man. Feeling good? You okay? No?
I'm just in fantastic physical condition if it means I'm about to be completely run down.
Okay, I'm sorry I asked. All right, let's talk, before we get to bullpens, let's talk about something pre-game that someone can seize on, if not today. I think actually they can seize on it today because the Diamondbacks are in action. What are you looking at there?
I just was using Gerald Perdomo as an example on guys who sometimes are, like, who have big splits. Like, he's a switch hitter, obviously, so he's going to be batting from the right-handed against lefties, from the left against righties. He's 370 versus lefties and 218 versus righties. Also, sometimes he hits ninth in the order, sometimes he hits second in the order. Obviously, these things are huge to know about because let's say he's going against a mediocre lefty, his number to get a hit should be much higher than it is when he's batting as a lefty and batting ninth, because batting, and is he at home or is he on the road? Because whether he's going to get that last at bat in the bottom of the ninth versus the top of the ninth. If you're on the road, the chances of the ninth guy getting a fourth at bat are much greater than if you're at home, because if you're at home, you can go eight innings and then he may never even get the fourth at bat. So these are like some of the things you want to look at when you decide, because sometimes they're not moving that number that much. A guy like Perdomo could be minus 180 and then minus 195 or something, you know, if he's a right-handed batter batting second. It's a huge difference, you know. And obviously you have to understand all the hits markets and what they should be like. For instance, Jose Ramirez gets a hit every single game. It's like ridiculous. He's on fire the last couple of weeks, and his numbers don't seem to really go up. I saw one day where he was like in the 300s. Most days he's in like minus 220 or minus 240. These things are not moving as fluidly as you would think. I won a ton with TJ Friedel. He got a hit he was getting like multi-hits every day.
That's,
it was incredible.
Guy. That's your,
you know,
boy.
And if so, yep. So if you're, I mean, sometimes you could get a minus 165, which is absurd, you know, for a guy who was hitting that well. And if you're watching these games and you see who's dialed in, you know, you can really get an advantage.
So again, for those who aren't, you know, who might be new to this, it's what Todd is saying is that you just can't expect, and it manifests this way, you just can't expect books to be able to price all of those individual markets correctly. Teams, sides, that's a different story. For instance, the Astros, huge splits teams, 342 weighted on base versus left-handed pitching, 308 WOBA, which is 24th versus right-handed pitching. That's going to be, by and large, built into the lines if a team is heavy. If the Astros are facing, I should say, one of those handedness sides in pitching. But for these individual markets, different things. So Jose Ramirez, to your point, Todd, last 16 games, 28 of 71, a .394 batting average, with 11 of those 16 games being multi-hit games.
And it's just not priced in, is it, at this point?
No, it's starting to become priced in. But, I mean, there was even a game against Skubal where they got two hits and Jose Ramirez got one of the hits. I mean, he's just unbelievable. And if you watch his at-bats, you see why he gets hit. Even when he gets out, he hits a line drive at somebody. You know what I mean? So he's this – and for because he was maybe not – he wasn't hitting like this early in the season, but he's had stretches like this in his career. He's a great hitter, obviously. They were maybe putting him down at like minus 220, minus 240, minus 210. It's just not enough. He should be up in the, you know, in the 300s, like, you know, Freddie Freeman is when he gets hot, you know.
Let's talk about bullpens.
I mean, there's guys in the 400s, you know, like Bobby Witt is in the 400s sometimes. It's ridiculous.
Bobby Witt last summer was just, it was incredible. You were more surprised if he got out than you were if he got a hit.
Yeah.
Okay, so a lot of in-game stuff you do has to do, obviously, with bullpens. If there is one thing that folks should know, it's bullpens. Best team you would say for winning close games this year with the deepest pen?
I like Minnesota Twins. Yeah, I love that. And I don't even like this team. They're aggravating as hell. But the bullpen has so many good arms to throw at you. Jacks and Stewart and Sands and Durant. I mean, it just goes on and on and on with how many guys they can throw out there for the sixth, seventh, eighth. A lot of teams, you know, you have the lead in the sixth inning and they put in one of those garbage guys to move you to the seventh and eighth and you're scared, you know, crapless because they're not going to make it. Like Arizona Diamondbacks put somebody in, you know, it's, you know, you're holding your life in your hands because he's going to walk four guys. You're going to freak out. You know, Minnesota Twins, they just put guy after guy who throws heat and they just get outs.
Thanks for going crapless there, Todd. I appreciate that. Well, just let me say that in advance. By the way, Twins, best bullpen. Bullpen as a whole, best fielding independent, 3.17 in baseball, best xFIP in baseball, 3.35, pen as a whole, best war of all bullpens, 3.9. I already know the answer to this because you can't stand this bullpen, but the worst in your opinion is?
Well, I mean, if you take out like the really crap teams like the Rockies, if the Arizona Diamondbacks for a good team is just unbelievable bad bullpen. It's just unbelievable. And you see the guys who are coming in, you know, you see that Beeks guy is coming in and it's like, oh my God, Thompson. I mean, these guys are just, they're terrible. They're just terrible. And you know, when you have Shelby Miller as the closer, I mean, come on. It's just, you're hoping for Adam balls, you know, just hit it at him and hopefully get to double play or something because, you know, it's going to be hard to get through that last out. And I'll tell you, you know, Atlanta's bullpen lately has struggled a lot. You know, they're not considered one of the worst bullpens, but Iglesias can't get outs anymore. He blew a save in San Francisco this weekend, and then they let Johnson try to do it, and hit two outs, two strikes, Matt Chapman, it's a two-run homer. So, you know, Atlanta's been – a lot of these bullpens also go through, like, phases where for, like, 3 weeks they're, you know, they just can't get a save, you know?
Yes.
And then maybe they'll start to cool down a little bit and they'll start to be able to do it. But, you know, it's unbelievable, some of these bullpens.
The Diamondbacks, there's only four teams in baseball that have a negative war when it comes to their pens. The Diamondbacks, only the Angels have a worse war, minus 1.2. The Diamondbacks, minus 1.0, their bullpen collectively. And the Braves, to your point, no effective closer. They've lost 5 one-run games in a row, and four of those games in this 5 one-run loss streak, four of those five, they have coughed it up, or they've given up runs, I should say, in the ninth or in extras in four of those games. Their pen minus is part of that minus war brigade also.
Can I make a point about these relievers that I think I've heard you talk about before? But you can't just look at how the relief staff is doing, because there's really two relief staffs on each team. There's the relief staff that comes in when they're losing, and there's the relief staff that comes in when they're winning.
Yeah.
And teams are different. Like, for instance, Cleveland has a good relief staff when they're tied or winning. But then when they're losing, they start trotting out guys like Jacob Junis or Kobe Allard. And it's like, there's a real difference there. So, and that makes a difference if you want to play a team to say, come back. So, for instance, let's say it's a 5-2 game and you say, hey, I think this team could come back because they're playing a team that can't hit, and you could get +3, minus 148 or something, you know? Well, you can't do it if you know that bullpen is going to put in their crap guys and their crap guys are bad. You know, if it's Minnesota, right, they don't really have crap guys except Funderburk, you know? But, you know, some teams have just crap. the Cardinals kind of have like crappy guys they put in when they're down three and good guys they put in when they're up three, you know? So you got to know that stuff too, which is kind of interesting.
There's so much. I mean, we could do this forever because there's targeting, you know, guys in hit markets against pitchers who allow contact. I just want to leave with this one thing because you pointed this out yesterday. And this is the kind of stuff we nerd out on. Michael Soroka of the Washington Nationals, times through the order. First time through the order, 1.56 ERA, 194 wOBA against. Second time through, 5.65 ERA, 353 wOBA. Third time through, 13.50 ERA with a 497 wOBA against. Just some of the stuff that Todd seizes on and bets against. Thank you, Todd. Appreciate it, man. Thank you so much.
Have a good morning, Gilly. Glad to see you.